Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I am your professional handicapped host, James Andrew Cox, JC for short. But I don't think I really said that in the podcast before, you know, but that's okay. We do have a gentleman by the name of Alan Hallis. Hallis?
Yep. Yep.
Got it right the second time. Hallis. Yeah, so it's Hallis. He contacted me on Podmatch, and we're so glad to have him on here. I've been getting countless good artists from Podmatch, so we really think Podmatch. Alan, what's good? How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. It's good to check in with you. See how you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I got your thing on Podmatch, I really wanted to talk to you because you've been working in the independent music industry for a long, long time, 15 years, right?
Yeah, going on 15 years plus now of being around independent music, for sure.
Right, yeah. And I'm sure you've heard everything under the sun, you know, whether it's bad things, good things, you know, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've heard my fair share of just a little bit of everything. You know, some great artists that I've discovered over the years, some definitely my fair share of not so great artists, but
right.
Well, we always make it work.
Yeah, well, that's kind of fair. You know, you always get kind of, you are a radio host too, right? So
yep.
You get all the, okay. So for one thing, I wanted to ask you about this because I was on your Instagram page, and for anybody who wants to follow me on Instagram, I'll leave it in the description. But I found a video of yours about bad pitches.
Yes.
And yeah. I do want to talk to you about that because I am an aspiring radio host with not that many submissions yet, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Bad Pitches Only is a segment that I do on my social media. I started doing it about a little under a month ago. And basically what happens is, so I run a music website called Breaking and Entering that I started in 2014. But I also host a radio show that is weekly on the air here in Milwaukee, where I'm from. And so I get emails from artists and they will have everything under the sun, but the most important information about it, which is definitely like, you know, the info about the actual artists themselves. Right. So I started doing a series where I started looking at some of the old emails that I have. I try to make a rule for myself that they've got to be at least like older than a year or two so that, you know, nobody can trace it back to them. I blur out the artist name, but it's everything that you shouldn't do as an artist to send me stuff. I've had people just send me their streaming link with no information about them. I've had people tell me that they are the hottest artist in the city and that they're the most slept on. And in actuality, maybe nobody's ever heard of that artist before.
Right. Yeah.
I've had event people that have told me that they have booked a show, and then I asked them for who's the lineup, who's on the show, and they wouldn't tell me.
So
it's been a fun little series to look back at all of the realities of what people get and try to get their music, how they try to get their music out to the media. Yeah. And for lack of a better term, they're trying, but
they're trying hard, sometimes. But they don't know what to do. Yeah, because the video I watch of yours, a guy, I guess, submitted his song, and he's like, yo, man, this is an absolute banger, you know? But he only had his MP3s. I'm like, and you're like, he sent me MP3s, which is great, but I can't do nothing with them because,
Yeah, I can't upload. So what I do is I write about artists and cover them and new releases, but I can't upload their music to the internet for them, right? So I can't do that because of like copyrights and things like that. So in his case, he sent me the MP3 file that wasn't intent on being on the radio. It was supposed to be for a print or written up article, and I can't do anything with it because frankly either I have to go find it on streaming somewhere, but I can't upload his file for him. So just you know, one of the many, many things that I've had over the years. I've had everything under the sun sent to me to try and get me to write their music up. So, you know, it's an interesting journey for sure.
Right. Yeah, because like I said before, I'm aspiring, you know, I'm not like you, so don't, you know, but a lot of people, a lot of musicians forget to include your ISRC code. And you need that. I say we because I feel like I'm in the same boat, but I'm not. You need the ISRC code because it follows how many streams that song's picking up on your station. A lot of artists forget that, you know. And I'm sure you know because they just send you the MP3 and expect everything to happen. I'm like, that's not, you know.
Right. Well, it's the ISRC code, and sometimes they don't even know that they need to have their songs registered that way too. That's another thing that I've run into with artists is they'll send me just a file, and it won't be a song that they have registered, so that, you know, if it's played on the radio, they don't get the tracking for that because, frankly, they don't know that they're supposed to have that, right, on the back end. So a lot of what I've dealt with for sure has been artists that are just kind of learning the ropes and getting it all figured out. And, you know, there's not necessarily a school for all of this, right? Like to learn the business side for 90% of the artists that, you know, actually put out music, maybe, you know, the majority of them don't know how to track their stuff, how to get paid for their music, and performance royalties. Like none of that really registers with them, right? A lot of what I deal with is for sure artists that are just figuring out how to put out music and do it the professional way, and I have some tips for them along the way when I can. But for the most part, it's a lot of, you know, just seeing what you get every single day and seeing what the good stuff is and putting it out there.
Awesome. So you are from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
I love
your shirt on your website, because it's like, I think it's like Milwaukee versus everybody, you know. I'm like, oh my god, that's so great, I love it, you know. That's on your website, breaking and entering tickets.com, right?
.net on that
.net.
One, yeah.
Okay, yeah,
.net. Yep. And then, we started the Milwaukee versus everybody shirts. We started selling those recently because, you know, we're a small town in the Midwest, but
there we go.
We have that attitude too about us. You know, it's something that's a unique thing to Milwaukee for sure.
So for people listening, you can click on the links below, but I'm going to add them. He's on tpublic.com. He's selling, you know, shirts on tpublic.com and also Amazon. And I find that very, very interesting because I never heard of of someone like, I mean, like independent artists, like you selling anything on like Amazon, you know. I guess that's a very new concept, you know.
For us, it's definitely within the last year or so, I think, that we were starting to upload designs to Amazon and get things fulfilled through them. I've gotten some t-shirts from them. I've gotten some hoodies from them with our own logo. And it's just the reality of running a small business is sometimes it's a little bit cheaper if they're going to do the production for it. So we don't make as much money on it as we would if we probably printed our own shirts, but it also is a way that, you know, it gives something out to the fans that can still have our logos on it.
Right. Yeah. And I totally get the fact that you will purchase your own items because I just did, you know, with mine, when we're cats, cause you want to be able to, feel the fabric and see how well it is first before you sell it to anybody, you know?
Yep.
Cause you don't want to sell crap to your public, you know? So yeah, I understand about, yeah.
For sure. The first thing I did when I put the logo t-shirt on Amazon was I bought a t-shirt and I bought a sweatshirt right away just to see what I was working with. And I still wear them every day not the same shirt every day, but I still wear them pretty regularly and we'll wear the sweatshirt out to shows and things like that too.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's always good, you know, because I'm like, because I hear so many people saying, you know, why do bands wear their own shirts? You know, well, for one, it's promotion. For two, they might be like us. You know, they want to try it out before they sell it to us. So they can, you know, because nobody wants to sell anybody your garbage, anything, you know, unless you're like a greed company. And I'm for sure you're not a greedy man. So that's awesome. No, you're doing it for the fans and you're doing it for the musicians like I am. So. I said before, you are from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and you said that it's a pretty small place, but I looked up bands from Wisconsin and you're kind of right. I mean, you do have Violent Femmes, which is from Wisconsin. Yeah, which is great. Cause I found out about them in the '90s when I was 18 or something. And I used,
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Is that signed?
It is signed by currently it's signed by two members of the Violent Femmes.
Nice.
So I know I'm friends with their current drummer, John Sparrow. So shout out to him.
Yeah.
And he was able to get those two to sign the other two current members of the Femmes to sign it. I need to get their original drummer to sign it. Mm. But I know some people that know some people that know how to get to them.
Yes.
So
yes. Networking,
that is the plan.
Man. Networking. Yeah. It's all about networking, brother. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And another band that I want to talk to you about that's from Wisconsin, Milwaukee, is Steve Miller. You know, he's a great artist, you know, which is odd because I don't ever remember seeing his face until I saw him on a podcast. Which is the first time ever, which is like, I went through like 42 years not seeing his face. You know, I never knew what the guy looked like.
Yeah, and there is a Steve Miller record behind me somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through it and try and find it and pick it out, but there's a few. I think that he is one of those artists that he kind of blew up before MTV was a thing, so image wasn't everything for him. Mm. I'm sure there was plenty of magazines and photo shoots and all sorts of things that come with being, you know, a rock star. Mm. But I know his voice more than I know his face. If I saw him, you know... If I that was somebody that I would see, I, you know, wouldn't be able to tell you offhand who he was.
No. I'm still trying to figure out how he's still under the radar without, you know, getting like posted everywhere. Because to this day, I saw him on the podcast one time and I just looked him up. But other than those two times, you won't see what the man looks like ever, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of weird, but kind of cool at the same time, you know?
Yeah, and actually, I mean, I'm sure for some of those rock stars from that time, like, there's probably a little bit of, like a little bit of comfort knowing that they didn't have to go make videos. They didn't have to go do all of this stuff to break out. You know, once MTV came along, that changed everything. And then all of a sudden everything became visual. And now with artists, I mean, it's more visual than ever, right? With Instagram and with TikTok and all of those things that you have as an artist. So I'm sure that somebody like a Steve Miller is probably very happy that he never had to make a TikTok in his life. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah. Because he came to the Township Auditorium here in South Carolina. I didn't see him, but I wanted to. But but he's still at it, you know, still cranking out those tunes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
Okay, so I want to ask you a very fun question that I don't think you got asked before, but I don't know. You know, we'll see. So, have you heard of the Super Collider? You know, the CERN machine where you say that, like, if you turn it on, like your reality switch and stuff.
The Super Collider? I have not. Okay. I'm a little familiar with it, but I've heard of it. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen it in action.
I think it's in Germany. Yeah, so I'm not going to. Yeah. Okay. But okay, so say that's turned on, okay? And mm-hmm. the whole world is like different than what you perceive right now, okay?
Okay.
So if you wake up tomorrow and discover Europe for a minute for a band, that minute, you know, the whole world changed, you know? And you're a front man of a band. What is the name going to be? What genre would you play? And what would your debut album title be?
Oh, man. Yeah. I definitely have never gotten this question before.
Nice.
I wouldn't be the front man of an existing band, right?
No, this is your
own. This is a whole new thing.
Right, okay. Yes. Yeah. Or, oh, man. I mean, we could do...
If it's an alternate world and I am the front man of a band and I don't know, you know, like who we would be, I actually have pretended to be in a lot of fake bands when I was like me and friends will be like, oh yeah, that's totally our new band name. Like that's a running joke with us.
Yeah.
Well, you know, somebody will say something in the course of conversation and we'll be like, oh yeah, that's our band name. Me and a group of friends were headed down to New Orleans for a friend's bachelor party. And we were in this random small town in like Tennessee. And we saw all these pictures of bands on the wall. And we were joking that we were going to put our name, like our picture on the wall. And we were going to tell them that we were a band. And we were going to call ourselves the Rogues. So I'm guessing my band name would probably be the Rogues. I don't know what my name would be. I when I was a kid, I thought that I was going to change my name to Shane. So when I was like 4 or 5, I was like convinced I was going to change my name to like Shane or Zach or something like that. So I'm going to go ahead and say Shane would be the name, whatever.
Yeah.
The band name would be the Rogues. And then the album name, the debut album name, because we joked when we said that we were going to be in the Rogues, we said it was going to be the 100 Proof and a Prayer tour because we were drinking a lot while we were on our way down to New Orleans. Yeah. So we would be in the Rogues and it would be the 100 Proof and a Prayer tour. I think that would be the one. So, but I've had plenty of people to say that we were going to be in bands.
Right. Yeah.
Me and a friend in college said that we were going to be in an emo band called Bleeding, where the E's were going to be 2 number 3s. Mm-hmm. Me and another friend were said we were going to be in a DJ duo where we just rapped about like 90s things. So, yeah, I mean, like that's always actually a running joke with us is that we're like, oh, yeah, that's our new band name. But, yeah, I think the most fleshed out one I have is probably the Rogues and 100 Proof and a Prayer.
Yeah, 100 Proof. I like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we speaking of 100 Proof, a lot of main bands are doing like whiskeys, you know, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I ordered 2 of them. I ordered one from Metallica, and I ordered one from Machine Head. You know,
okay.
And I can't stand the taste of whiskey, but I did try them. You know, and they're okay for what they are, but I just can't take the alcoholic, you know, flavor. Is there anything that like have you tried to order these new whiskeys from your favorite bands and you know?
Yeah. So I do want to try the Metallica one. I have never had the Metallica one. I definitely want to try that one. Whiskey is usually not my go-to.
Mine either.
I am normally. But I'm trying to think if there's one that I've tried that's been really good. I mean, I don't usually drink gin, but I've had like Ryan Reynolds Aviation Gin. But I don't know if I've had one from a band, actually, now that I think about it. But I would definitely love to try the Metallica one just to say I've had it, you know?
Right.
So I can't imagine. I mean, those guys must go through it. Like it's nothing, or at least back in the day, they probably would have.
They did. Back in the 90s, it was a running joke that the whole band was called Alcoholica, you know?
Yeah.
Because they drink so much, you know? And some old school listeners is like, yeah, they haven't been good, you know, back when they were drinking stuff. They were on fire. Now they're not good because they're not drinking. I'm like, dude, you can't have it all, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you either want to be healthy now or, you know, it's like it's weird how fit fans are.
Sure. And actually, now that I think about it, I have had Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre's gin and juice, the pre-made canned cocktail drinks. I've had those. Yeah. I had one at a recording studio one time and I had like half of it and was like, I need to slow down the way that I was drinking it. I was like, this is it. It hit very fast. Mm. So that's definitely been the one that I've had for sure. But and when I used to like first start going to bars, I didn't know what to order. So I would get gin and juice because that's the only thing I kind of knew because it was like in the song.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I like turned like 25 and was like, I can never drink gin and juice again.
Right.
You're like, you know, after years of drinking it, I was like, oh boy, this is too much. But yeah.
So, well, let's talk about your independent music platform, Breaking and Entering. Fantastic name for it.
Thank you.
What inspired you to launch Breaking and Entering, just like we said before, and how has your mission evolved since 2014 to now?
Because sure.
That's a long time to actually do this. And yeah. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So Breaking and Entering launched for me. It was originally going to be a podcast. And it was about 2009 when we first started anything that was related to it. A friend and I were going to launch a podcast straight out of high school, and we were going to do it on college radio at Marquette. And basically, he became a broadcast, or I was a broadcasting major. He was a psychology major. So two different worlds, right? Mm-hmm. And so he split off after a few years to go do his thing because he was very busy with school. I kept the website, and this was like the blog era of how you discovered music. Yeah. So mm-hmm. that's when I started writing on the website and started putting up posts with like one Milwaukee artist every week, and they were going to be our artist of the week. And so then people started catching on and they wanted to become the artist of the week. And so they would submit their music. And then 2014 for me is when, like, right after I had graduated. I graduated in 2013. And it was January 1st of 2014. And I was like, I'm fresh out of college. If this is going to be a thing that I do, if I want to pursue this, I'm going to start writing every day. And so then I went in with the intention of writing about music every single day and have done so for a very long time. But that was eventually what got me into, you know, writing for a magazine and then leaving that magazine to work at my current job at On Milwaukee while still keeping Breaking and Entering running. So, it actually unintentionally kind of launched my career that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm trying to build up when work's failing. It's hard, but I mean, you're so passionate about what you do, and I can tell it in your voice and your eyes. You're very passionate about this, you know.
Yeah,
and it just takes time to build up, you know.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of days, to be very candid with you. There's been a lot of days where I've thought, you know, what am I doing here, right? Like, you know, when it comes to writing about music. Sometimes, you know, things are exhausting and you'll come home from like a show that, like in our case, we also put on shows once in a while.
Okay.
Like you'll come home from a show and maybe it didn't go the way you thought it would. And you'll sit in your car for a second. And I've had days where I've just been like, why am I doing this? I could be, you know, doing anything else. I have a degree. I could be working anywhere else. Like, why am I, you know, why am I doing it? And it definitely comes down to like, you want to build your own thing and you want to keep your own thing. And this has definitely been my baby for, you know, 10 plus years of just writing about music, and has given me so much. So it's a real struggle, but it's a day by day thing that you do, right? Like, cause you do it cause you love it.
I mean, I'm right there with you. Cause sometimes I'm like, well, I think that this is like a thankless job, but then again, you know, like I said, it brings you so much joy and passion, you know?
Yeah. So and lately I've really tried to embrace some of the great things that happened because of this. Right. So maybe, you know, you have days where you're like, well, we didn't sell a sponsorship today or we didn't do a whatever today or some of those things. But then like I'll have other days where I get access to a concert that somebody else probably paid $100+ to go see. And I'm sitting right there next to him, or I'm standing right there on the floor next to him for a show, you know? So we just did a festival here in Milwaukee called Summerfest that was 3 weekends long. And I've been fortunate enough to be given press access for the last 10 years. Nice. So to be able to go and see that and not have to, you know, pay for tickets and do whatever, like, all came out of something that I created. So, I mean, like that, when you think about it that way, like it putting it in that perspective definitely helps me. So there's fun perks along the way for sure. Obviously nothing is, you know, perfect, but, being able to balance it and take, you know, appreciate some of the great things that have happened for sure. So enjoy those steps along the way.
Yeah. I'm trying to, it's hard sometimes and I'm thinking, you know, and I feel like you've been where I am and, you know, everything, mm-hmm. But going on the same topic as your site, in what ways has your site helped or shift or even amplify the cultures in Milwaukee's music scene?
Yeah, definitely. So when I first started the website around that 2014, 2015 era, there was a lot of people making music in Milwaukee and there was a lot of good things happening, but I come from also producing music beforehand, and I thought I was going to go to school to be a record producer. But what really happened was I discovered that there's so many people making music in Milwaukee in their own little pocket of maybe, you know, their group of 10 or 20 friends, or nice. They're just known in this neighborhood and somebody else is known in a different neighborhood. So there really wasn't a lot of cohesion between them. And what I aimed to do was definitely highlight not only the amount of talent that is happening in Milwaukee, but being able to connect those bands and being able to see them, you know, learn from each other. And so one of the things that I've really seen is I've had, you know, bands tell me, hey, we found other bands from your website. Yeah. Or people in the media have said, hey, we found new acts to play on the radio or cover or whatever it might be from your website. So to be that like central thing, like one of the best achievements of breaking and entering has really been that I've been able to connect so many artists in the city sort of indirectly, and they've all gotten to learn from each other or meet people through my website. Mm-hmm. And really just, you know, kind of speed up that process of getting everybody on the same page.
Going off of that, off of what you just said and the question that I just asked, how do you measure success for the artists you promote on your site? Like streams, fans, growth, you know?
Yeah.
And do you think you helped them with that same success, you know? Because you said you have other bands finding other bands perform, you know?
Yeah, I think for sure the way that I probably gauge success for a band that has been on Breaking and Entering has definitely been how they get booked afterwards. It's not entirely because of anything that I've done, okay. But we've definitely had shows with people that, you know, we've sold out a room before, and after that, maybe that artist left to go play in New York, you know, or they can go on tour and they have the confidence to go do that. Or, you know, seeing artists that we covered that I know that we were some of their first media coverage, seeing them land on larger outlets, you know, whether that's in Milwaukee, whether that's nationally, or being able to play larger festivals or stages because, you know, they had a buzz that started on Breaking and Entering. That's definitely, I've had enough success stories of that I feel like has been a success for me in turn because of it, you know, and it helps your credibility too with the website. Yeah. To just say like, hey, we had so-and-so before they became super big, you know, which is great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you develop friendship right there, you know, but you develop friendship before they got big, which is great, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it'll open more doors later on for you and then to work with each other or something, you know, you never know.
Yeah, and we also have done a beat battle every year, which is essentially like we call it Big Beat MKE, and it's kind of like the movie 8 Mile, but instead of people rapping at each other, it's beats that they've made ahead of time, and they get to play like 3 1-minute rounds towards one another, and so one of the winners of that contest went on to go out to LA and is working as a producer out in LA now, and you know, I think the confidence of saying, "Hey, I won this contest," not maybe it wasn't the entire decision process for them to go out to LA and to go out to try something in a larger market, but it definitely is a boost to say, hey, that first year of that contest, somebody went on from here and then went out to, you know, try to make it where a larger percentage of the industry is.
Right. Right. Okay. So this is a kind of a, like a very, being in the independent artist music industry, specifically, right? Because I don't think you work with bigger artists yet. You know, you may or may not. But knowing that you're in the independent field right now, do you think that it was better in the 90s or now? Because now you have streaming. Back then, you had actual physical merchandise, CDs, vinyl records, everything. On one hand, streaming is okay, I think, but on the other hand, it's not being perceived well by musicians because they're not getting paid the right amount. I just want to know your thoughts and, you know.
So it's a complex thought for sure, because I mean, I can see both sides of it. I personally think that music right now is in a better place than where it would be back then because of the amount of opportunity and the amount of an equalizer that the internet is. So if you're an artist and you make a good song and that song happens, if you're savvy about how to use the internet, you have more of an opportunity to get noticed than you would have. And I'll take an example here. There's a band that has a record sitting on my wall that's a re-release. They're called The Shivers. They are from Milwaukee. They were around in the 80s, and they had everything. They had the look. They had a great sound. They just lived in Milwaukee and weren't able to get their record out to the coast the right way, where all of the industry were. And for whatever reason, they had great songs that could have been hit songs, but they didn't because of the time and the limits of what they had at the time. You know, there was no internet for them to get discovered. Whereas now, if you're an artist and you make something really great here, you can find your pocket of people, whether maybe it's not a million people, but maybe you find 4,000 or 5,000 fans that can get you to become, you know, a successfully touring artist or an artist that can make some money on their own. Maybe not through streaming, but they'll support you. They'll buy your merchandise or they'll come to your concerts. So the equalizer of the internet alone, I think, makes me think that music is in a better space for new artist discovery now than it necessarily was. For the majors, I can totally see, you know, streaming saying, hey, that's not the same as when we were selling physical records as much as we were. But I think just for the opportunity alone, I think new artists have a better shot now than they did back then.
Because there's a lot of hate surrounding the Spotify guy. I don't know what his name is.
And let's be clear, too. I don't think that, you know, getting paid 0.003 cents per stream, which is what you make.
Right. Yeah,
that is the actual rate that you make for a Spotify stream is 0.003 cents. So, I mean, less than, you know, a third of a penny per every time that a stream comes out. You know, I don't think that that's a way to make a living either. And I don't think that that's necessarily fair either. Yeah. But I would love that if that could even get up to a cent, which is crazy to think that you're begging for a penny, but that's where a lot of artists are. And I think, you know, if people are creative, they'll find ways around it. And I hope that they will, but,
Cause you have stuff like Bandcamp and Patreon and stuff like that, where you could make your own, income base right there. But I prefer Apple Music as opposed to Spotify. I hate Spotify just because of that, you know.
Right.
Just because they don't pay artists anything.
And you know what? The other one too is like Instagram and whatever else, you know, social media, TikTok. You could have something that the algorithm pushes and gives you 7 million plays. And if you know, you might not get any money from Instagram for those 7 million plays of your song. Yeah. There's no value there. So they pay out worse than even like streaming. So that in itself is a system that's got to get fixed somehow. But I feel like the landscape overall, people will, it will continue to grow and evolve, and artists are going to change. You know, they'll find something that's going to work for them. That's going to be a little bit fairer.
I just want to talk about this lightly before we get into the next segment here. AI, okay, so AI is doing tremendous things, you know, but there's talks about how AI is going to take over the music industry, which I do not agree with, because I still think that AI is still in the infancy of what it is, you know.
Sure.
And there's a lot of people that says that they're going to take over. They're going to take over the music industry.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think it's going to take over like in 20 years? Or I mean,
I don't think it's necessarily going to take over, but I think that there's going to be a happy merger of AI and music at some point. And by that, I mean, what I think is going to happen is that there's going to be an artist. So this is actually pretty close to me, and I'll talk about it in a second. Yeah. There's going to be an artist that is an AI artist that we're all not going to find out is an AI artist until after the fact. And, you know, we'll like that artist, and we will eventually discover. And it kind of has already happened. There's a band that's got like hundreds of thousands of streams that is a completely AI project. I think eventually, though, there is going to be an artist or an act or an AI act that is going to have a single that we're all going to like, and we're all going to listen to it, and we're going to stream the hell out of it, and then find out after the fact that it wasn't a real person that was behind it. And we'll all be mad, but we'll all kind of still like the song, which is going to be the problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that it's going to take events like that for AI to really get involved. I do also think like there is room for people that want to just make things on AI. And I, you know, that may sound counterintuitive to a lot of what, you know, to people that are purists about art. I think that a person writing songs and writing relatable content is for sure always going to win out. That there will always be great songwriters, there will always be great performers, and those things will shine through. So I don't think it will necessarily take over, but I think that there will be some kind of harmony in that. So let me talk a little bit about the part where I think that, you know, people will discover AI music a little bit, you know, after the fact, after it's already caught on. So last year I put out a TikTok, and it was just a purely for fun thing where I was like, oh, this is what pop punk is going to sound like when it's aged up for like adults. And it was just a song that I wrote on Suno, which is an AI application, about how you don't want to go to the gym anymore and all this stuff. Made a really like cheap video of me sitting in the car listening to it, and made this like AI thing play just for TikTok, entirely for a TikTok, entirely for a video.
Right.
Posted it, went to the gym for real, like actually went to the gym.
Yeah.
And then as I was coming back from the gym, I like went to open the locker and look at my phone, and it had like 10,000 plays. And then the video had like 20,000 plays. And I was like, oh, we got something here.
Right.
And then it started blowing up because people were commenting on it, and they liked the video and all this stuff. They liked the song. They thought it was catchy. People were asking me to put the song out. I eventually put the song on Bandcamp and on streaming. Like they were like, oh, make a full version of this. So I made a full version. Like, and I, you know, I did have to walk that line where people didn't know if it was AI or not. And like, I was like, I don't know how to address it. Like, it's popular, right?
Right.
So it ended up racking up like on Instagram is nearly at 7 million plays on that video. And then it's at, you know, several hundred thousand plays on TikTok as well. Streaming, it's got tens of thousands of plays from Spotify. Every once in a while, I get a check for like $10 sent to my PayPal. You know what I mean? So,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, I got an email today for $12, and I was pretty stoked on it.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where like people didn't realize that it was an AI creation until after the fact. And I think a lot of people still don't know that it was AI. And so people were like, how could you do this? How could you make this song? And like, people were mad at me about it. And I was like,
yeah,
I literally just made it for a video. I didn't make it thinking that, you know, it was going to become anything more than a, you know, 60-second clip on the internet. Mm. And like, it just became its own animal. So I think you'll see eventually large scale, somebody will do that though, with the intent of being an artist. Mm-hmm. And when they do that, that's when we're going to find out after the fact that we liked an AI song. Mm-hmm. And we're going to, you know, have to say, well, what do we do with this song that we all like, that's a hit, that we're not supposed to like anymore. Right.
Right.
So
right.
Eventually like those worlds are going to merge at some point.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, so somebody has to make that song, so technically it's sort of minor, like you made that song, but it's technically from your mind, you know.
So
technically you did make the whole thing, you know.
Right. And, so, and I'm credited as a songwriter on it, is essentially when I uploaded it to streaming, credited myself as a songwriter for it because I did write the words for it. Right. It made the melody. It made, you know. And so eventually I also think that people will be using it in the sense that they'll be able to write things and use an AI like they use a synthesizer, right?
Yes, yes.
Or use a sampler, and it will become just an instrument that you can use. Mm-hmm. Because we're trying to, I think we're all collectively trying to figure out where that line is right now. Right. Of like, at what point does this not become human? You know, if I use Fruity Loops or FL Studio or Ableton or something, and I'm just rearranging blips on a screen and it makes that song.
Yeah.
I'm producing that song, right?
Right.
If I'm typing those letters into, you know, typing those lyrics in and clicking generate, I'm technically making the song. It still came from my idea, my brain. So at what point do we say, okay, this is all AI, or this is all not human anymore? I think it's like a gray area that we are going to figure out in the next few years, and it's going to take some leaps and bounds and some very interesting turns along the way.
Yeah. I don't, technically if a computer makes music on its own, then that's right. Total AI, you know?
Right.
But as you just said, you've read the words, you make the this and that, but it's music without your voice, you know, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, I think it's just going to become, people are going to get comfortable or uncomfortable with what that line is of when it becomes fully human or when it is considered not human, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, and it's going to get harder to recognize too, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot of the stuff that is made on AI right now, it's still pretty noticeable. You can tell when it's not a human that wrote it or sung it or whatever. I think it's moving so fast that at some point we're not going to know. We're not going to know when something sounds incredible, and we're going to say, this is maybe AI. We don't know. We won't find out. So it's going to be interesting. But I think there is always going to be room for artists and always room for people that can play guitars and play drums and sing, and like that will never go away.
No.
It's lasted this long in eternity that will never, you know, it will never just be fully abandoned.
No, so. No, there's always got to be somebody playing, you know, a couple of these bad boys right now back here, you know, so.
Yeah.
From what I learned in my 45 years of being on this earth is you can never please everybody, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that AI is a good thing right now, but it might be like a Terminator situation later on, you know, where we don't want it to happen. But I do want to talk to you about your radio station before we let you go. So you have a radio station, it's FM 1.10.1. Nope.
Yep.
That's wrong.
102.1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I am the host of Love Local Radio on FM 102.1 in Milwaukee on Friday nights. here. And so for an hour, I get to play all Milwaukee artists. Mm-hmm. And I get to play music that I like, which is great because Yeah, well, it's not my station. It's just a show that I have on it. Yeah.
Okay.
If it was my station, well, I'd be counting the money. I wouldn't be caring about a $12. Yes. I wouldn't care about a $12 Spotify check, right?
Right.
But Love Local Radio is an hour of Milwaukee music that I get to play, and I'm excited because it's music that I care about. It's artists that I care about. I get full control over what I play in that hour. Every week, we also interview a Milwaukee music person, whether that's an artist, maybe it's a band collectively, maybe it's somebody in the music scene that is, you know, booking bands and putting on shows or doing things like that. And really, it's my chance to do what I'm doing with Breaking and Entering and with On Milwaukee and continue that into a different medium and be able to take the artists that I see and have found on the internet and play them for a lot of people that might not have otherwise discovered them, which is great. It's a great feeling. And I get to record it and kind of do my own thing and send it off to the station. And they've been very receptive of it so far. So it's been a really fun little trick.
Mm-hmm. So with you promoting local bands, like you said, local artists, how do you balance promoting local artists while maintaining mainstream listener interests?
Right. So we're 1 hour on Friday nights that, they don't have their top 40 alternative on. So I think it's actually pretty welcome so far from what I've heard is that, you know, a lot of people are they know FM 102.1. It's been a station that's been around in Milwaukee for a very long time. And so being able to be the 1 hour that things go completely different is kind of a novelty to say for an hour only, you can hear this Milwaukee, you know, music that you wouldn't otherwise hear. But then after our hour, we're right back to, you know, playing bands that are top 40 alternative bands, you know, top 40 rock bands and getting them in there. So I think like it's been unique to say that we are like the shiny new toy for a little bit. Right. I'm saying, you know, we're for just this 1 hour, you can hear it there. And then afterwards, the shows are uploaded to On Milwaukee afterwards as well. So people can stream them after the fact and they can say, hey, that's my friend's band. You know, that's on.
Yeah.
Which is really cool to have people and have bands able to share that with each other.
So with you getting all these great submissions in from different bands and whatnot, how do you curate the playlist to make it interesting for people to listen, you know, for the hour, you know?
Yeah. So when I'm putting together an episode of Love Local Radio, I generally try to have a little bit of variety in there because I do only have an hour, right? Yeah. So, you know, if it's something that's a little bit more like on the punk side of things, I want to counterbalance that with something that's maybe a little bit more like electronic and weird. Or if it's, you know, something that's a soft kind of acoustic thing, I want to make sure one of my next songs that I play is like very aggressive.
Right.
So it's always a little bit of everything, a little bit of variety. And I'm fully aware that people probably are not going to listen to the full hour of our show. But if I catch somebody, you know, when they're flipping through their channels as they're driving home and I happen to hear, you know, they happen to land on my show for a little bit, I want them to hear the full scope of what Milwaukee music is because there's a big amount of talent that is here. And so being able to give them like a little sample of these is definitely like along the way, something that I try to do. And the other thing I really try to do is say the band's names as many times as possible when I can, because, you know, if they like something, I want them to immediately write that down, you know, especially now, or I want them to Google it or, you know, find them on Spotify or whatever, so that ultimately all these bands are getting the exposure of being not only played on the radio, but getting new listeners that might not necessarily have been there in the first place.
Yeah. How has being on the radio shaped the way you view Milwaukee's music over the years, you know?
I think it has definitely helped, you know, being able to get submissions from people from all over, from within the city too, you know, from all over our city. There's definitely, it's a platform that allows me to discover new bands too, because they might not have seen what else I'm doing just online, right?
Right.
They might not have seen anything that I've written for On Milwaukee. They might not have seen anything that I've written for Breaking and Entering. They might not have ever come to any of our shows. But then they know me as the guy from FM 102.1. So they're able to send their band to me. And in turn, I'm learning about them. So that's already happened a few times where a newer band has sent me something and said, hey, we would just love to be on the radio if you could play us. And I've never heard of them. And this is my first exposure to them. So it's opened some doors for me, but it's also opened doors for the bands as well, which is great.
Right. Yeah. Before we let you go, and I do thank you for coming on our show today. You've been awesome to talk to so far. I do want to give you a big shout out because you are a podcast host as well. It's Hustling Sideways podcast with Alan, you, and Jim Love. You know, so could you explain what y'all talk about? And I'll definitely link it below so people can also tune in to the podcast.
Sure. So Hustling Sideways is a podcast that we created in 2021 and has kept going. It's about having a job and having a side hustle at the same time. So when I started writing about music, I was working for a bank full time. I was working in marketing for them, complete opposite of, you know, music and that whole world. And so I was learning how to balance my time between those two things, because sometimes things need to get done during the day. And I used to work in an office before COVID hit. So I was always, you know, in an office, but then maybe I have to run out for my lunch break. And on that lunch break, that's my time to call up a rock star, because I had an interview scheduled with a celebrity in that time. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do, is I would literally go to my car, sit down, get on my phone really quickly, do an interview with somebody for 10 minutes, and then walk back into my office. And nobody even knew that I had just talked to, you know, like the lead singer of Everclear one time, or Weird Al Yankovic was my first celebrity interview that I got to do.
Wow.
And I did it from my car in the parking lot of the bank when I worked there. And so I, you know, like most people at my main job, my real job at the time, had no idea that I was even doing anything involved with music, and I kind of hid it from them. So our podcast is about having a side hustle or having a passion project, something that you do outside of what your 9-to-5 is. And how do you manage balancing those things? And how do you still keep your small side hustle going? And how do you grow that while also holding down everything else that you got to hold down, like in life.
Right. So. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So So does your coworkers now know, or are you still understanding how that, like what's their,
what did you think of that?
Okay.
Yeah. I left the bank, in 2020. And so after that, I was still though, that was 7 years of doing that and managing that, for me. And then after that, I got a job writing for a magazine in Milwaukee about music primarily. And now I'm at On Milwaukee, where I write about music full time, you know, in addition to all my other things that I do with On Milwaukee. But yeah, I some of the coworkers from back in the day know now. Because Breaking and Entering's bank account is still at that bank. Sometimes I have to like come in and cash a check from a show from, you know, our gate from a show. Right. Or sometimes I'm taking money out to go finance a show. Some of them know that I do things with music, or they'll see me online now, or they see me on the radio now, and they're like, oh, we had no idea back then. And I'm like, yeah, that was kind of the point.
right.
So,
that's awesome. Yeah,
so some of them know now for sure.
Yeah, cool.
Some of them don't. Maybe some of them never did. I don't know.
Right. Or they still don't. Right. Yeah. They still don't know. You know, you never know with people. You know, people are always weird. So, you know.
Right.
You don't know if you're inspiring somebody or not inspiring somebody, which is always a give or take, you know, kind of thing. But
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we do have, let's see, we have two more questions to do, and then we'll let you go. First question is, Okay, so I was going to ask you, who are you listening to now, which is music-oriented, but we're going to do a Mount Rushmore of your favorite four artists right now. Who would it be? You got four of them.
That is tough. Are they have to be current artists, right?
No. This is yours.
Oh,
anything,
man.
You want to be.
My Mount Rushmore is really tough because I grew up listening to a lot of like punk rock, and I grew up skateboarding, and then eventually got into hip hop later on after that. So I missed a good chunk of hip hop in that same time. I would probably go with, well, for sure, the Ramones. Okay. They're up there for me. My favorite band is NOFX. So those two, that is the punk side of things.
Right.
It's a bit of a merger, but I would say a merger in styles, but I'd say the Beastie Boys are up there for me on the hip hop side. And I want to go more current, but I don't know who I would even pick out of that. I mean, I'll go with somebody that passed away recently within the last year. But he's a Milwaukee artist. I'll go with Twan Mack as my four. All right. There's only four heads on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
That's probably the varying styles. There are so many different artists that I listen to, but like, those are my four for many different reasons. But in terms of like just impact on my life, I think that those four acts are all something that I seriously like hold on like a different regard.
Right. How much time did you waste playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2?
I have all the games. There's a Tony Hawk Trick Tips DVD that is sitting right across from me right now. There's a Tony Hawk skateboarding DVD from Birdhouse Skateboards. Yeah. Like, I played all the games. There's a PlayStation over to the right of me right now.
I tell you what, Tony Hawk soundtrack for the first one was by far my favorite one ever made, you know. Fixes on it, you know. Goldfinger, you know, Superman. I love Goldfinger. Yeah, so it just brings back so many memories. And
I played every day, I'm sure, for years and years and years, played every day of it. And then when they re-released 1 and 2, I played the re-release of 1 and 2 as an adult.
I got 1 and 2.
And then 3 and 4 just came out as a re-release. I haven't bought it yet.
Me either.
Even though I have the PlayStation discs, I will probably go buy it. And I will probably waste too much time playing it for sure. But it influenced so much of, like, skateboarding seriously influenced so much of my musical taste. You know, I mean, just hearing it in skate videos and playing the video games or being literally at events and hearing bands while playing while skateboarding was happening. Like that whole generation for me was influenced on really just the eclecticness of what those soundtracks are.
Mm. I agree. Tony Hawk Pro Skater got very weird near the end. I think it's underground that started the weirdness, you know, 1 through 4, like bar none, you know, the best ever in that whole series.
Absolutely.
And then of course there's always Skate, you know, the Xbox versions. I never played those, but I heard those were great too.
Yeah.
We do have one more question, and this is the hardest question we're going to ask you today. Okay.
Okay.
So is there an artist album or song that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me, your parents, your loved ones, how it makes you feel deep inside your soul? It's like when you hear it, you can't explain how it makes you feel, you know?
Sure. I don't know if there's one particular artist that makes me feel that way that I like couldn't tell anybody I feel.
Yeah.
There are moments, there are things that are hard to explain. So I go to Lollapalooza every year, and usually the last night headliner, like the last show, final show on the main stage, for whatever reason, I will feel like a little tremor in my throat. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I don't know why. It's the it's the same thing. It's the fact that I get to go down to Chicago and do it. It's the fact that I have worked so hard to get to that point. And it's like the last night of it that I'm like, if I never get to go do this again, at least I got to do this many of them, you know? Yeah. And like, there's no end in sight, but, you know,
yeah,
but like that feeling for sure is like a hard to explain type of thing where you're like, damn, I really got, it's because I got to that point, you know, that you're like, at least I got here. So that I think is just, you know, part of like taking it all in and enjoying it while you can. So
here's another question, and then I promise we'll let you go. Have you ever felt nervous for a band? Okay, so I'm gonna let you in on this. So when I see Megadeth or like a big band I've never seen in, you know, years, you know, right before they come on the show, I always have to go to the bathroom. I don't know why, you know, but. But I feel like I'm nervous for them, you know, so I don't
know.
Are
you nervous for their like performance? Like you're worried for them that they're not going to be able to perform well, or they're going to be.
Yeah, I guess it's like a nervous tick that I have, but I always have to go before the headliner comes up. It doesn't matter.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Actually, there have been times definitely where like, maybe the crowd wasn't the same kind of crowd that what we were going to have. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like we book shows with a lot of Milwaukee acts, and maybe if it's like a mixed genre bill and I can see that it's more like rock people and we're about to put a hip hop show on, you know, for a 20 minute or 30 minute set, like I'll be a little nervous of like, oh, these people don't know these guys, you know, or something like that.
Right.
I'm sure I've definitely been nervous for an artist before, but maybe not on the level of like a Megadeth where I'm like, Megadeth, those guys got it. I feel like those guys will.
I don't know what it is, but I just feel like, oh my God, I hope they don't blow it. But then again, they've been doing this for as long as I've been around. So it's like,
I'm sure they appreciate your concern. Yeah,
least, I'm sure they do, but they never know. They never know. But I talked to Dave, you know, the bassist, but I didn't tell him that because I forgot. So he doesn't know still. So it's all right. We're going to give you a few shout outs here. He's on Facebook at Breaking and Entering, the number one. I will post it below. And on Instagram, Alan Halas, H-A-L-A-S. And we're also on TikTok, X, and LinkedIn if you want to get a hold of you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, everywhere is just at Alan Halas too. That helps. Okay. It's always connects to me. So make sure I own my name.
You're right. Yes. Cool. So we do honestly thank you for being on the show today, and I would love to work with you somehow, some way, in the future. And I beg you to come back on. You've been wonderful to talk to.
Awesome. So. Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it so much, and thanks for being able to have a great chat about music.
Yeah. Thank you so much, sir. All right. And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.